Good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Elisa Lederer, and I am one of the graduate research assistants for the HEROES Initiative, and I'm also a fourth-year doctoral student at the School of Public Health at Indiana University. And I am really happy to be able to talk with you about how we go about assessing implementation fidelity for the HEROES intervention. And I don't have anything to disclose, but should mention that we are funded by the Wellborn Baptist Foundation, which Mindy already discussed. And so our plan for the next 15 minutes is that I'll tell you a bit about how we actually go about assessing implementation fidelity. I'll provide you with a recent overview of our findings, and then talk more about our framework for this evaluation and how we do so in a responsive way, as well as what we've learned from this process, the things that we find really beneficial, and then quite frankly, the things that are also challenging about how we go about a responsive approach to implementation evaluation. So starting with how we actually go about assessing implementation fidelity, we do this yearly in the spring at each HERO school, and it's primarily through interviews with each of the key stakeholders. So Mindy already discussed how each school has a wellness coordinator that really, along with partners, drives the intervention at each school. So we sit down for an hour or two with each wellness coordinator and have a semi-structured interview protocol to ask a bunch of questions about how things are going. But we also make sure to also interview the principal or the assistant principal to get that administrative perspective, as well as the cafeteria manager, because we're finding out more and more that the changes that happen or don't happen in the cafeteria are often related to the cafeteria manager's involvement and buy-in. But we also make sure to triangulate the interview data with other methods. And so the first is observation. We make sure to look at the cafeteria, what types of foods are being served, what types of educational materials are posted. We look at the gym and see what physical activity equipment is going on, what type of PE are they doing, as well as programming whenever possible. So as much as we can have HEROES programming coincide with our visits, we attempt to do that. So can we observe a walking club when it's going on? Can we see what those taste testing programs are looking like? Can we see Spark in action? And then we also review different documents. So for schools that are creating wellness policies, we want to see what that actually looks like in writing. We require that schools talk about HEROES in their wellness newsletter, so we ask to see copies of the wellness newsletter. And then depending on the programming of the school, they tend to have different types of documents. So for example, there was one school whose wellness efforts were featured in the local newspaper, so they showed us that article. There was one school that put together a scrapbook of pictures from throughout the year. So there are certain documents that we say, please let us review those, and then anything else you'd like to bring to the table, we'd love to look at, just to get a sense from multiple perspectives of the programming that's going on, and both the successes and the challenges. And so Mindy already discussed the 9 domains that are central to the HEROES intervention, but all of the review that we do in terms of our interview questions and observation and document analysis are really related to each of these different domains. So we end up using all of those qualitative data in order to create quantitative scores. And this is just an example of what this looks like for the domain of health and nutrition education. Each different domain has about 2 to 8 different indicators, depending on what the expectations are for the intervention. And so what we do is that we have each indicator, which is a specific expectation within that domain, and we score based on a 1, this part of the program really just isn't in existence at the time of the site visit, a 2, which is it's there, but it's really not meeting the standard, a 3, which is what we would consider fidelity to the intervention, it exists, it is meeting the standard, and 4 is when the school has really gone above and beyond. And then in rare cases, there's a not applicable, which is perhaps based on the grade level or the implementation year of the school. And the way that we go about deciding on these scores is through a rubric. And so we definitely want to make sure that because there are several members of our evaluation team doing the site visits, that we have consistency among the scores. And so we have a predetermined rubric, which we've developed collectively. And so we look at that rubric to say, okay, you know, based on how the school is doing, should they get the 1, the 2, the 3, or the 4? And then we also make sure to communicate with each other throughout those site visits, and then we meet at the end of when all the site visits have been completed to say, okay, in the small number of cases where something's not a perfect fit with the rubric we've developed, what do? We do some, and then we make sure that we've reached consensus for anything that isn't quite the perfect fit. Okay, so what do these findings actually end up looking like? You know, we've been doing this for several years, but I'll just share with you the most recent findings from this past spring. And so this is based on 11 HERA schools. I will say our cohort 3 is a bit smaller than usual due to some unexpected issues, but typically we have between 4 and 8 schools in each cohort, and you can see that they're elementary, middle, and high schools. And so this is based on the 11. And so how we go about, once we have our quantitative scores, how do we actually get our finalized data? So first thing is that we calculate an implementation score. And so what we do with that is that we actually go about standardizing all the scores by converting all of the 4s, the exists and exceeds standard, to 3s, which is it's meeting the standard. And that's because we want to make sure that we are acknowledging and recognizing the wonderful efforts of the schools that are going above and beyond, but at the same time, a 3 is what's really fidelity to the intervention. And so we convert all the 4s to the 3s, and then we calculate the total points that each school has scored out of the total points possible. And that percentage is that total implementation score for the HERA's intervention in general. And then for each domain, we take the mean of all the indicators within that domain in order to create that domain score. So that's what this is what it looks like. We were really pleased to see that schools have been able to implement HEROES with fairly strong fidelity. The range is really between about 75% and 99%, with the mean being 87%. And in terms of the domains, there are 2 that are not here, and that's just because not all schools were doing the needs assessment and one of the other domains. So these are the ones that we could assess all the schools for. And you can see that this, again, as a reminder, this is out of 3.0. So many of the domains are being implemented very, very well. And our cutoff for what we sort of consider high implementation and low implementation is a 2.5, because that means that at least half of the indicators are being implemented with fidelity. They're getting that 3. And so while not the topic of this presentation, I know there are questions about, well, what's going on with those bottom 2? So just to summarize briefly, what we've seen, and Mindy alluded to this, is that with food service and availability, sometimes this can be a little bit more of a challenge, although it's almost close to the 2.5, because there sometimes is a little bit of resistance in terms of the competitive foods and the fundraisers that are money makers to the schools and the classroom parties, that kind of thing. And in terms of the district and wellness and school wellness policies, we really want schools to be developing their own wellness policy, regardless of if the district has one. We want it to be more specific to the school. And we find that often schools are looking to their district to develop those policies instead, and we're really asking for a bottom-up approach instead of a top-down. And so I think that that has just been a little bit more challenging and has required us to work a little bit more with the schools in order to make that happen. And in terms of the future, what we'd like to do with these analyses is that we'd like to look at school-level characteristics. So how are things changing based on if you're a rural school versus an urban school, an elementary school versus a high school? And then actually, the data that Mindy presented on the lower implementation versus higher implementation, that's hot off the press. And so we're excited to do a little bit more with that to figure out how the level of implementation is affecting student-level outcomes. So I'd like to turn now to talk about really our conceptual framework when it comes to assessing implementation, which is that we have a responsive framework to our evaluation. What does that mean? Essentially, responsive evaluation is when, instead of it again being that top-down approach, it's very much a collaborative process. And so all the stakeholders are actively involved in figuring out how things should be evaluated and really have a voice in the process. And because of that, it also has an emergent design. So what that ends up looking like for us is that what happens, and this is throughout the year, but I would say primarily as a result of the site visits that we do, is that we learn a lot of information from all of this really rich qualitative data that we get at each school. And based on that, we talk with the foundation about the things that we're seeing and the things that seem to be going really well that we could potentially build upon and do even more with, the things that maybe the expectations weren't quite right. We talk with the schools, we get their input. And based on that, sometimes we make changes to the intervention in order to improve it based on what we've learned. And as a result of that, then we also have to make changes to the evaluation measures. And then this is a cyclical process and continues. And just some examples of that, not to go too in-depth, but we realized, for example, that there were some pretty specific things that we wanted wanted to happen in the cafeteria, but this was also happening at the same time as all of the USDA requirements. And so we realized that that really had to be a priority for the schools, and that adding so many other things in HEROES was perhaps a little bit too much to expect in that particular time period. And so we had to make some changes to the expectations there. We used to ask that all elementary school students use heart rate monitors in PE, but then realized that for our smaller students, they were actually falling off, and that just wasn't actually a feasible expectation. So we had to make some changes to that. At first with HEROES, our nutrition education was more passive education in terms of educational materials, and realized that that may not be sufficient. And so the taste testing program, Superfood HEROES, that Mindy showed you the super cute cartoon character about, that's actually a newer program that we've just implemented over the last year and will now be a requirement in the schools. So that's a new component of the program. With our evaluation report, we don't just write up our report and pass it along to the schools. We actually meet with each individual school to share the findings, to get their feedback, to make sure that they feel as though we've assessed them in a way that's fair, and then provide the foundation not only with those individual school reports, but aggregated reports. So these are some examples of how things have changed over time because of everyone's collective involvement. So we've learned a lot from this process, and for us, I think that it's been very beneficial, which is why we continue to do it. You know, instead of this just being sort of a summative process, it really has given a lot of formative feedback in the process that has really let this intervention be as effective as it can possibly be. And it also not only prioritizes program effectiveness, but also the needs of the stakeholders, and has really helped us to not be this, you know, scary evaluation team that's coming in to judge people, but really just be one of the partners within this overall program, and I think has hopefully led us to be welcomed instead of feared. That being said, it also comes with some challenges. You know, one of the things that I think is really beautiful about having a longitudinal intervention is that you can compare how things have changed over time, right? And you can measure that, except we've been changing how we measure the evaluation, which makes it very difficult to see how things have gone. So, you know, if something seems to be improving, for example, is that because it's really a result of the program, or is that because we changed how we measure it? And so I think that is one of the primary challenges with having a responsive framework. And for those who are interested in publication, that's, you know, seeing how things go over a long time period is certainly of interest and is a little bit more challenging to do. And then just quite frankly, it takes time and effort to keep everyone involved at the level in which we attempt to for this type of framework. And so that that can be difficult, but also quite the benefit as well in terms of the outcome. And so in terms of our recommendations, if you are trying to figure out, is this a framework that makes sense for my program, I think that our biggest recommendation would be to ask yourself the question of what is the purpose of the evaluation and who will be using the results. Is it really to look at an intervention over a short period of time, or excuse me, over a longer period of time and make sure that it's maintained so it can be very, very, very empirically evaluated? Or is it to make sure that that intervention is effective as possible so it can be sustained into the future? Also, all of the team members really need to buy into this process. And if that's something that you may not get from some stakeholders, then it may not be the best framework for your program. And the resources also have to be there in terms of the level of communication or whatever resources may be necessary depending on the needs of the different partners. But for us, I think that it has been a really wonderful process and has had some really fruitful outcomes. So with that, I guess we'll take questions at the end, but I'm happy, as my colleagues are, to answer any questions you have.